All right, folks, welcome back. After our Thanksgiving break, today is Lecture 36 in the American History Program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. Before we dive into what I hope will be an exciting topic with a lot of discussion and a lot of anticipation built into it here, I want to talk about what we've done so far and what you are responsible for going forward very briefly. So before class, we already did part of this, but let me share my desktop for you and show you that on the class webpage, if you are in the live program as it goes now in 2014-15, then this is a very important link for you that's been added now, Facts, Practice, and Homework Tracker. So if you're on the recordings only, this is not really relevant to you. I'm only going to talk about this very briefly, not to take up all the airtime on this topic. But basically, this is where we will be monitoring all the narration work that the students are to be assigned and to be handing in. And I want to remind students, and this is relevant for anybody who's on the recordings as well. And so if you are working on the narration work, over the course of the next couple days, I'll be returning all of the narrations to the students, and then we are going to be working in class on editing them. So what happens is I grade and return the work of all the live students, and then we discuss them in class in order to help you and improve your understanding and your writing and your thinking and all of it put together. And so those discussions in class can be very helpful for those of you who are on recordings as well, whether you're a parent or a student and you want to know how to grade the work or you want to better understand the assignment in the first place. Listening to these discussions that we have in class is a great way to do that. And I especially want to focus in right now on one piece of advice, a general piece of advice that I see based on the assignments that I have seen, and it may be a feature of the fact that I wasn't as explicit in the assignment as I should have been, or there might have been a little bit of a flaw here in the way that I assigned the work. This assignment is a paragraph length exposition, which means a paragraph. That's just a long-winded way of saying a paragraph, and an exposition means you are telling somebody about something, right? So it's a writing assignment. You are to write a paragraph. And the title of it is The World We Live In. And so most of you got that, and most of you submitted something that is entirely appropriate here. However, two things jump out at me about the submissions that I have seen, and this is very important for everybody here. Okay, two things jump out at me. One is that quite a few people got sidetracked and did not write this narration. This is one of the classic mistakes that we all make when it comes to, we all have to make this mistake at some point or other in our academic careers. Not answering the question. So there were quite a few people that didn't answer the question in the sense that they went off and chose four facts, kind of just based on personal preference, or they started to tell me a story about things that happened in the past, or they decided that they were going to opine on various things that happened. That's not the assignment. So be careful that when you are assigned work in an academic context, that you actually answer the question that you are asked, not something else, because that's the surest way to get yourself in trouble in terms of the grade that you are hoping for. By not answering the question, you're not going to get the grade you hope for. So the title is The World We Live In. And very importantly, I want to say, it's not the world I personally as an individual live in. So the point of this exercise is to try in some way to get out of your personal context, which, especially as a young person living today, is going to be pretty limited. I mean, today more than other times, you know, people travel, and Timothy was just over in Europe. I'm very jealous. And, you know, we have this wonderful interconnected world in so many different ways. So we know more about the world, and we experience more of it than people have in the past. But still, you have to be careful that this is not a personal narrative. It's a world, it's an attempt to describe the world that we live in. And you would give this to another person, and it would still be true for them. So that's kind of an important test in terms of what you are writing, is that you would be saying to them, here, I have studied history. Let me tell you about the world that you live in. Not the world I live in as the writer, but the world that we live in common. And so that's the challenge here, is to communicate things that are true for everybody. So note that. I think that's an important feature of understanding how to say it. So globalization, for instance, is not a personal fact, right? It's not like, oh, I live in College Station, Texas. And so, you know, the world I live in is, you know, Texas A&M, rah, 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 so on and so on, right? And so it's, that's too personal, right? It's, or I live in Baton Rouge, LSU rocks, something like that, right? Go Tigers. No, that's too personal. That's the world that you live in. That's okay. But the world we live in, globalization, is true for everyone. In America, centrism, like it or not, a lot of people don't, but Americentrism is true for everyone. So if you live in India, the truth is you live in an America-centric world. If you live in Russia, and you're Vladimir Putin, and you want to be a tough guy, well, the truth is you live in an America-centric world, buddy, and it's a big headache for you, and so on. So that's this project here. Is describing the world we live in. Okay, that's point one. Point two is, this is a history assignment. And I was very surprised to find how many people submitted narrations that didn't have dates in them, that didn't have the events marked as occurring at a specific date. So absolutely a requirement here of relating information about the world we live in historically is linking our understanding of the world to the timing of the events that shaped it. So you can't write a history narrative without using dates. Every single one of your four anchor facts must be explicitly dated as part of the narrative, please. Okay? Two very, very important pieces of advice that are very general here. So even though we're not looking at any of your specific narratives and grading them in front of everybody here, that's something that everybody needs to address. Some people didn't make either of those mistakes, but that's okay. You know, they were quite common, so they're worth addressing here in a general sense. All right, so some of you already have corrections. You can start working on those yourself, or you can wait until the corrections are formally assigned. There, you might take advantage of the discussions we are going to have in class this week about the writing. So once everybody has their graded narrations, then we will have some discussions in class about examples of writing. They'll be anonymous. And I'll typically be pulling from very good narrations, so you don't have to be worried. But sometimes not always, but they'll be anonymous, so you don't have to worry about being embarrassed if you made a mistake or something like that. Okay? And we will work as a team to help each other better understand and have a better outcome in the end. Okay? So that's something to look forward to in the coming week. Again, if you're on the list and you haven't sent me a narration yet, get on it. If you are waiting for a correction, it'll be with you shortly. If your name is not even on the list, get in touch with me. Okay, enough of that for the time being. Let's get to our topic, because I'm excited about this topic. So the topic for today's lecture is predicting the future. This is fun. And so what we've been doing so far is getting ready to think historically. We've been getting ready. We've been staging this study of history for ourselves as a group by collecting together some information that is absolutely indispensable to understanding the past. And that can, in other words, there's no choice about collecting this information. If you want to make the claim that you understand history, or you want to make any intelligent, reasoned statement about the past, and you don't know these things, well, quite frankly, your statements are probably verging on presumption or bordering on delusion if you don't know these things. So if you don't know that America was founded in 1776, then you're clueless. If you don't know that America was discovered in 1492, then really, you're not ready to talk about history. And so these are the things that we have to build up as fundamental facts of awareness, or I call them anchor facts, in order to understand the past. And then they create a framework, and then we can link the things that we encounter to that framework and build a tower of knowledge. Now, we're starting to do that. We're starting to do that because we've been looking at the world. We collected the anchor facts. We worked on them. We're in a pretty good shape with regard to those. We can still, you know, it never hurt us to continue to review them and work on those. But we're in pretty good shape with the anchor facts. And now we've collected together some knowledge, some quite significant knowledge about the European civilization of 1492 and thereabouts, so that we actually know some stuff now. We know some stuff. We know what the world looked like in that time. We know about things like the Reconquista, setting the context, ending in 1492, right? Isabella and Ferdinand. We know about the Hundred Years' War and the relationship between France and England. We know about the popes and the Holy Roman Emperors struggling for power, and we know about the rise of Protestant sects in Christianity, such as Lutheranism and Calvinism and Anglicanism, and the rejection of the authority of the Pope. Wow, we're starting to know some stuff. And so this is good. This is good because now we start to have the payoff of knowing history. It's just the beginning. It's just the beginning, but we are going to start to have power. And the power that I'm referring to here is the ability to know the future. Now, remember that at the beginning of the year, I said history is not about studying the past. If you take that perspective, you end up in a trap. You end up being a person that collects facts in a bigger and bigger pile and keeps them on the shelf. And you don't end up knowing more about the world than anybody else. You just end up knowing about the past. And so the real purpose of history is not to just collect more and more facts about the past, but rather to study the past as a way of understanding the world. And if you have this understanding, and the stronger that it is, and the more complete that understanding is, you begin to develop a power. The kind of power that, you know, nowadays in the culture that we have, we would associate it with some kind of comic book character, right? Some kind of comic book character who can glean the future. He's got some kind of prescient awareness and he knows what's going to happen. It's sad that in our culture today, this idea of genuinely knowing the future, is characterized that way. But I think it's entirely consistent with where we stand in terms of history nowadays. This idea that predicting the future is some kind of superpower. It's not. It's a regular, normal power. And human beings can do it really well and really usefully and powerfully if they learn history. If they learn history. And it's always been understood by historians who pay attention to history properly that that's the case. I want to show you a kind of couple favorite quotes from some historians that I admire. And we'll start right here with this. So here's somebody who wrote some interesting histories. You might recognize him as a particularly important character himself in history. So here's Winston Churchill, former Prime Minister of England during World War II. Very important leader of the free world when the world was threatened. And here's such a fascinating quote. So, who are my readers for today? Who wants to read Winston Churchill's little pearl of wisdom concerning history? Timothy, get us started, please.
Okay, so should I just read the quote?
Yeah, please.
Okay. The farther backward you can look, the farther you can see.
Oh, read carefully. Try again.
The farther backward you can look, the farther forward you can see.
Okay, good. You skipped a word there, and it was the most important word in the sentence. So, forward. Okay, so, Winston Churchill, what is Winston Churchill saying here? Put this in your own words. What does that mean? It's such a very interesting quote, and it's true as well, I think. He's talking about predicting the future. Keen?
Well, he's saying the farther back you look into history, the more you know about the past, the more you can see about what happened, then the more you can see forward and glean from the past things that might happen in the future in relation to what the world is that he lived in or whoever this is who's using this knowledge wherever they live in time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So looking forward means the future, right? What's coming? What hasn't happened yet? But, and what he's saying is, how can you see that? Obviously, it hasn't happened. So, you're not looking at something that's happening. You're looking at something that's going to happen. How can you see what's going to happen? This is kind of almost like a paradox, but it's a fascinating, it's a nicely expressed phrase. How do you see what's going to happen? How do you see further forward? What's the means? Not by straining to look forward, but by looking backwards. How's that work? Well, my favorite historian of all time, my personal hero, can help us out a little bit with that. So let's go back to the inventor of history. A Greek historian named Thucydides. So there's two great ancient Greek historians. One of them was named Herodotus, and one was named Thucydides. They were the first, really, the originators of history, of scientific history. So somebody carefully, slowly, deliberately read me what Thucydides had to say, which gives us some important insight into what Winston Churchill was also trying to say. So, Alexander, slowly and deliberately, please.
Knowledge of the past is an aid to the understanding of the future, which in the course of human things must resemble if it does not reflect it.
Okay, thank you. All right, so notice, what did Thucydides add of substance here to what Winston Churchill said about history? Where does the power of prediction come from? We can see forward by looking backward. Why? I'll put it that way. How is it possible to see forwards by looking backwards? Yeah, we have knowledge and understanding, but what is it about that knowledge? What does it show us? How can it be a guide to the future, Alexander?
Because the things the future resembles the past, like he said, and the patterns that were in the past continue into the future.
Okay. Two things. One is, things in the future will resemble things in the past or reflect them. Good formulations. So, what's the difference? What's the difference between resemble and reflect? Why did he say both of those things? Because I think that's very precise language. What's the difference between resemble? What do they both mean and what's the difference? Keen?
A reflection is nearly identical to the actual thing, if not identical. Whereas okay. A resemblance is there's some more wiggle room. A resemblance is not exact.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, so reflect, it means be exactly the same, right? You look in the mirror, it's perfect. All right, it's a reflection of you, it's the same. All right, but resemble means, well, it's like, but it's not exactly the same. So it's, the word there would be similar. So things in the future are either going to be the same or they're going to be similar to things in the past. All right, so that's what he's saying about. So, and this is absolutely true. I have found this to be more than, I mean, it's a profound truth, but really remarkably true in all of my studies of history. How much of the past repeats and how much of it has, I didn't put the quote here, but another good quote about history is from Mark Twain. He wrote, "History never repeats, but it does rhyme." I thought that was a clever way of putting it. So that's true. It's always seems to be like things are happening the way they used to happen. They're happening again. And it's remarkable that way. And so there's a lot to be learned about what the world is going to be like by looking at the past. And to my mind, this is what historians should be doing primarily, professionally. The main job of a historian is to be a predictor, is to be a person who uses their expert knowledge of the past in order to inform those who are making important decisions in the present, people like politicians, presidents, and so on, and military leaders, in order to help them make the best decisions. So that the future that they create through their actions resembles the good stuff from the past, not the bad. Right? So, I don't have the quote up here. Maybe I should put more quotes on this handout here. But George Santayana said, "Those who do not remember the past are condemned to repeat it." So, if you don't have this ability to summon knowledge of the past, you're going to end up doing things that people did before and making the same mistakes that they did. Now, on the other hand, the positive side of this here is what I'm trying to focus on today, is the ability to predict, the ability to see the future. Now, this is an ability that if you learn history properly, you will develop and can develop in very positive ways. And one of my favorite personal accomplishments in this regard was I was giving a course to adults a little while back, I don't know, maybe a little bit more than 5 years ago or so. I was giving a course on the Middle East. And I told my students that there would be a revolution in Egypt very soon. And I felt that my prediction was grounded in a lot of different things that I could see about Egyptian society. It was grounded in my knowledge of American foreign policy, it was grounded in a lot of different things. And so I predicted to my students, I went out on a limb and I said, there's going to be a revolution in Egypt. It will be the next revolution because there have been previous upheavals and things like that. And I said, Egypt is going to have a revolution. And lo and behold, within a couple of years, Egypt had a revolution. Now it's completely stalled. And I could have predicted that as well. It didn't occur to me to think about what would happen. I did predict also that the revolution in Egypt would lead to the rise of Islamism in Egypt. And Islamism is the modern political ideological application of Islam to politics. And that's exactly what happened as well. I said the Egyptians would democratically choose Islamism. And that's what they did. And now what's happened is it stalled. the military's back in charge, and blah, blah, blah. It's going to be a mess. Ever since the Egyptian revolution started, I said, this is going to be a mess. It's going to be a long, long revolution. It's going to take a long time. It's going to be really messy. And I was right about that too. So this is kind of cool. It's possible to know these things and how they're going to unfold. That's just an example in the future. And the way to develop this skill and then be able to use it in life and have, in a sense, a power that a lot of people, other people don't possess is to practice this power and adopt this perspective as we study the past. And something kind of neat becomes possible to us. Here we are now. We've studied the Reformation. We've studied the Age of Discovery. We're closing in on, say, about 1600 or so. We haven't quite gotten there, but we're closing in on about 1600 AD, right? And pretty soon we're going to start seeing a new part of American history in which Europeans are going to start coming over and colonizing America. So this is a neat new change. This is a new phase of history. It's going to be an interesting, challenging phase for us to understand. And one of the things that we can do with this is we can start to develop our prediction muscles. We can start to work those prediction muscles by thinking about what do we know and what does that allow us to predict and to make predictions and to think about what the future of 1600 is going to look like before we learn it. Because now that we've got some knowledge, we're in a position to start making some predictions. Not very detailed ones, but some basic ones, some fundamental ones. We're in a position to start becoming predictors. And if we practice this art as we study the past, we develop this ability, then once we emerge from our studies of history, hopefully years down the line, having done a lot of good studies of history with a lot of different facts collected and powerful awareness of all of those things, well, we become the kind of person that basically is able to look at the world we live in and know where it's going, know what's happening. And sometimes that can be very specific. Sometimes it's very general. It depends. Depends on the level of your knowledge, depends on your expertise in particular subjects, and so on. But it can be really amazing and exciting. For me, I've experienced it personally. The ability to know the future. And it's really cool. And then if you can do that, then you get the real payoff. So what's so great? I mean, what's so great about this capability? Imagine yourself as a grown person with this powerful historical context of knowledge. What's the payoff? What's the so what in your personal life? What can you get out of that? Okay, so you can see the future. So what? Could that be of any use to you, perhaps? Keen?
Well, you can make decisions based on things that haven't happened yet. You can make decisions that are beneficial to you and your family in a personal sense, and maybe your business, based on things that you have been able to deduce.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me tell you about the richest people in the world. If in case you're at all interested in maybe attaining some material success in your life. The richest people in the world, people like George Soros and all those billionaires out there, what do? I'll tell you what they do. They predict their future. And they make lots of money because they're really good at it. And they study markets and they forecast the way that markets work. And you get guys like George Soros and they're making trades on the debt of countries like Greece and other European countries. And so they're making investments and investment decisions based on what they know the future is going to be like. And when they're right, they make tons of money. And yeah, that's an example of having this capability of predicting the future. It's not easy, which is why there aren't that many billionaires in the world, and not that many people who really have this capability. But it can be done. And the payoff is potentially quite amazing. And it doesn't have to be either on the scale of billionaires. It doesn't at all have to be on that scale. My personal favorite example of the importance of predicting history is a very sad example. But I think because of that, it's a very powerful example. My personal favorite example of the importance of being able to predict history is the Holocaust in World War II. Because Europe was heading in a direction. It was obvious for a long time. And the Nazis took power in Germany in 1933. And World War II did not start until 1939. But the direction of history was clear to anybody that was paying attention. So, some people paid attention, predicted properly, and especially, very tragically, well, in the positive sense, many Jewish people living in Germany and Eastern Europe, what did they do? Got out of there because they knew what was coming. And a lot, tragically, did not. And the results are one of the worst things that's ever happened, if not the single worst thing that's ever happened in human history. The slaughtering of millions of Jews. They didn't know what the future was. They couldn't see it clearly enough to get out of there. Life or death. I mean, that's, you know, you can use your ability to predict the future. That can make you money. But on the other hand, the ability to predict the future, sometimes, not always, history's not always as dramatic and shocking as that. But sometimes it is. Sometimes it is. And you have to be on the lookout for that and paying attention. And if you happen not to be living in one of those times and places, well, great for you. But if you happen to be, then pay attention and predict. And it's great to have that power. So you can, if you have to, you can get out of the way. Because to most people, history is something that happens to them. Right? For most of us, history is something that happens to us. We are not Manet's Narmer, we are not Columbus, we are not the Founding Fathers, we are not the makers of history. We're the people living in it. So mostly it's happening to us. So one of the most important things that we can do as regular human beings is learn history and, well, take advantage of it in every positive sense that we can. And whenever we see the bad stuff coming, get out of the way. And then on the other hand, if we happen to be capable of taking actions that could change history, and more people are capable of this than realize it, if we have that capability, and many of us do, then we can actually become the makers of history. We can predict it, we can intervene, we can act on a scale much more important than, you know, a particular vote in an election or something like that. Some people think of it that way, but much more important than that. You can go out and you can become a senator, you can become the president, and this is possible, technically, right? You can do things like that. You could become a general in the army or something like that, a position, CEO of a company. They're not impossible things and make a lot of a difference in the world. So this is what we're going to be, I'm going to try to inject this now more and more into the way that we are studying history, is to work on the predictive side of it as we study. And the reason why this is going to be, it's a good practice and it'll work well for us, is that we're in a special position. And this is really cool. This is one thing that history can let us do. If we look back to 1600 and we imagine ourselves living there in 1600 and we are preparing to study the story of that century, right? The 17th century. Why is it that we have a special power of prediction? Why is it that as students of history, we have a huge advantage and a really powerful capability of looking back and exercising our prediction muscles in terms of predicting, oh, what's history going to be like in 1620? What's it going to be like in 1640? What's it going to be like in 1660? Right, we put ourselves back there in 1600, which is about where we are now. And I say to you, predict the future. Why is that? Why do we have a special power, a special advantage there? You get my question? Timothy?
I'm going to take a step back and say that we have more facts to know about the future than they did in the 1600s. And that'll continue on. We'll always be having more facts, so it'll continue getting easier to predict the future in the future.
Okay, I think your answer reveals that I still didn't get my question across. It's a difficult question to ask, so let me try again. So, I'm going to ask you this. If we are starting this new segment of the course, it's 1600, and I asked you, predict what we are going to see. By that I mean, predict what's going to happen in 1700. Predict what's going to happen over the course of the next century that we are going to be studying. You get my point? So everything from 1600 to 1700. Tell me what's going to happen in this century that we are going to study now. Why are we in a special position to be able to do that? Why do we have an unfair advantage? If the hands aren't up, it's because you don't even understand the question. Ben, what's the question? Rephrase the question in your own words. You seem distracted. Juliet, can you rephrase the question in your own words?
It's sort of use what you know of the past to, and the events that led up to that time.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of predict the future, I suppose.
Well, what do you mean by the future in that sentence that you just said?
Well, the time after what you know. So, like, in this case, the 1600s.
Okay.
So.
Right. Okay. So Juliet does get the question. She's still being tentative about answering it because I sense that she doesn't quite see what I'm trying to get to here. But use your knowledge of everything up to 1600 to predict what's going to happen in the 1600s. So do you get that now? That's a perhaps a better way of putting it. Thank you, Juliet. So why is that easier for us? Why are we cheaters and asking and even addressing that question? Why are we in such an advantageous position? Keen?
Well, we don't just have knowledge, we have understanding. That the understanding is what puts together these facts into our tower of knowledge. So
that's true, but that's not where I'm going with it, so you didn't get it either. What, let me put it this way, what are the 1600s to us? What are the 1600s to us? This thing that I'm asking you to predict. What are the 1600s to us? Micah?
Because we know it's going to happen.
Why?
Because we live in the future. From that time.
Yeah, exactly. What are the 1600s to us? They're the past. So now we get to be these predictors because we already live in the future. So now this becomes an interesting exercise, a regimen for mind training, right? A regimen for thinking like a historian. You get to put yourself into the 1600s and say, what do I know? What do I know? Reconquista, 100 Years' War. What do I know? Reformation, religious wars. What do I know? And so on. Okay. Age of Discovery. How much has been discovered? So on. Okay. What do I know? All right. Now, say, all right, now what do I expect is going to happen? If you adopt this anticipatory perspective, this predictive perspective, then you get to do something really interesting. You get to start to challenge yourself in terms of how you think of the past and adopt what is ultimately the most important perspective about history is looking at it allows us to see the future. That is the most important thing. So you get to start working on this capability. Start developing the mental strength, the mental muscles that are these predictive muscles that you possess, but right now you haven't developed them yet. Because in order to develop them, you need facts and understanding, as Keane was saying. But what you get to do is you get to work at a certain difficulty level, which is much less than looking at the present and predicting the future that hasn't happened yet. You get to work at the simpler difficulty level, which is looking at the future, which to you is the past. So if you want to do predictions and test predictions and think about whether things come to be the way that you expect them or not, well, just look. Did they happen the way that you thought they would happen? If so, why? If so, if not, why not? How does history work? You develop this power, you can know the future. All right. Well, we don't have time for any predictions yet, so I guess we're going to have to slip them in in our next class if we can. But we have talked about it a little bit already. We'll talk about it more. What is this world going to look like that we're going to study? We're getting into the story of Europeans are going to be coming to America and living here now. What's that going to be like? What do you expect to see? What's going to reflect the past? What's going to resemble it? And then here's the other exciting thing about knowing from the future. What's not going to be the same? Especially whenever you can find it, what's going to be better? How do the wonderful things that we have arise? Where does the freedom come from? Where do all the wonderful technological advances that we enjoy today come from? When are we going to find those in our story? We can look forward to that. So our study of history can be something that involves thinking about where this is all going. It's leading to us. If we understand our world and we look back, we can become good predictors. And if we're good predictors, then we can understand the future. Now we're really doing history. All right. Well, hopefully that has you intrigued. And so we will begin predicting things tomorrow and looking, of course, at what exactly happened. All right. That'll do it for me. Thanks, folks. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.